You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Hello to YouTube. We are talking all things Bermuda Championship, Liv's Team Championship. That's in the books. Lots of stuff happening on this Sunday. Hit the like button. Make sure you're subscribed. We'll get started right now. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gammon, joined tonight first by Mark Immelman. Mark, good to see you.
Hey, sorry, I didn't even realize Liv was on the go. I've got to pull up my leaderboard here on my laptop. No, kidding. We're all good.
You've got time. That'll be in the C block. So you've got time to get your Liv takes all fired up.
Well, you got to understand, in my house on a Sunday afternoon when the Falcons are playing, and then I've got to be watching golf because I've got to be on the show, which is fun. And so I'm toggling between the two. And I'd given up on the Falcons because the guy scores like some stupid 60-yard touchdown. I'm like, ah, screw it. And then they go to overtime and I switch it off. I'm like, I'm done with this. Then I switch it back on just to see what the final score was, and they won. I was like, what the hell? So it's a good day here in the Immelman house.
they certainly survived. That was so far the best game of the week. Greg Ducharme is here. Gregor's good to see you.
What's going on, boys? Excited to be here. Excited to talk a little Bermuda, little Liv Team Championship. Interesting times in the game. But how about that Seamus Power, Rick? That was something else.
My God. You know, he is – it's sickening, right, Greg? Because you know that I was just completely out on Seamus this week.
Yeah.
A guy that has been, like, my heart and soul. Like, I love this guy. And I was like, man, this is not the week for Seamus. He goes out and wins, so it makes me look a fool. But I'm stoked for him. I'm happy for him.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. Does it make you look a fool? Because on one side of the coin – well, you wanted to fade him, but on the other side, you know, he's a very near favorite, and you know, he didn't quite fit the bill as a chalk player, but he kind of did in a way. So I find that very interesting that another, you know, at least whether he was favored or not, he was the highest ranked player in the field, and the highest ranked player in the field goes out and wins again. And it's just this really interesting trend that you have been all over. And it just seems to be continuing so far this fall.
Yeah, I would have said, looking at the field list, I wasn't on the preview show with you guys, but I would have said he was the class of the field with respect to everyone else. And then just the way he hits it from wherever I've watched him, I mean, he's a big, strong guy, and he's got big, strong legs, and the wind's not going to blow him around very much. And he hits it heavy, man. That golf ball, growing up in Ireland, it cuts through conditions. And so I would have said, if I got to lay a bet, I would have happily laid a few shekels on him. But sadly, I didn't get a go.
It would have been one of those scenarios where I would have been better off without seeing the data. Right, Greg?
Because yes.
On Monday, we were like seven straight events in which he's lost strokes on approach. But to Mark's point, the reason that Seamus was even on my radar was that event, that Korn Ferry event in Las Vegas, where it was howling, 40-mile-an-hour winds, and this guy's ball was not moving an inch, right? It would have been better if I closed my eyes, did not know what his stats were leading into the event, went into my memory bank of that Vegas event and said, it's a Seamus week.
Yeah. You know, there was a lot that said it wasn't a Seamus week, but we did also talk about on Monday, we compared Seamus to Patrick Reed last year, who was in a very similar position where he was hitting it terribly and all of a sudden came to Bermuda and it worked. And I think sometimes playing in those windy conditions like this can get a player who's struggling with his golf swing a little more imaginative. You got to hit shots. You can't play golf swing. You got to hit. And I think Seamus did a really nice job of that. Obviously, he did a really nice job with a lot of things. But I think that's kind of this recipe sometimes when a player is struggling with their ball striking, they can get a little bit of a different point of view because they're playing in conditions that they're not used to, at least for they're at least conditions that are different than what the recent form was. So sometimes it's a way to get them back on track.
And I would add to that, you know, when you got wins like they had, where you, in many cases, sort of throw the yardage book out the window, and you've got a number of uneven lies all over the show, form guides go out the window because you can get on the wrong side of a wind gust and get a ball rolling down a hill, or you get a good break or two, and the greens aren't that fast. So you can, that to me sort of levels the playing field a little bit all the time. So, you know, when you get wins like that and you're not really looking in yardage books that much and you have to create, to your point, I feel like that's where, you know, it's anybody's ball game.
Seamus Power, 19 under par, a one-shot victory over Thomas Dietrich, though that does not tell the entire story. We'll get to that in just a second. But this is a big win for Seamus because, Greg, we talk about all the time, going from the first victory to the second victory on the PGA Tour is a massive leap. The 2021 Barbasol already on the resume for Seamus now adds this one. It's kind of that validation win and tries to push him further to his own declared goal of making that Ryder Cup team.
Which is a very interesting goal. I wouldn't say I was surprised to hear that. I think it's actually not surprising to hear that, but it's an interesting thought. Is Seamus Power going to be a part of this Ryder Cup team? And, you know, the Europeans have a very strong top end, but their depth seems to be the question. And we've been looking for that young player to come up and kind of fill the void of the, you know, Poulters and the Garcias and the Justin Roses and those kind of players who have been such a long time staples on the Ryder Cup team. And they seem to be, in a way, missing out on that kind of group. But you have a player like Seamus Power come out and start playing really well, a player like Sepp Straka coming out and playing really well. And if that can continue, you end up with guys who have that PGA Tour experience. You're not taking a long shot on a guy who's playing on the DP World Tour and the stage is vastly different. This is a stage that is, of course, different because it's the Ryder Cup, but the players that they're competing against have a tendency of being very similar. I know this wasn't a field loaded with Ryder Cuppers, but throughout the year, if Seamus is to make the Ryder Cup team, he'll definitely have played really well against some of the best players in the world, against many of those guys who will be on the Ryder Cup teams.
Yeah, two things. First off, you know, this was a weaker field and people can say that and reference it. But the truth is, you still have to go out and play well for four rounds and win. You know, just because you're the best ranked player in the field, that doesn't mean you're going to get the trophy at the end of it all. So that sort of speaks to what he has. And then to a part of the Ryder Cup thing, there was a stage last year and, you know, Kyle Porter makes a number of comments I find amusing. And on this very show, he goes, oh, well, Seamus Power is the best Irishman in the field right now. And that Rory McIlroy happened to be in the field too. And I was like, yeah, okay, Kyle, I see what you're trying to say, but that's ludicrous. But, you know, in a funny sort of way, cloaked in the humor of Kyle there is a very astute point where, Rory is the guy, even though his game was off at the time. And Seamus is up and coming and turning heads. And there was a stage last year where he was leading Pebble Beach by a street after two rounds. And I had him in the third round and it wasn't so good, but he still was impressive. And playing there on the Monterey Peninsula, it was gusty, it was windy and stuff. And I looked at this guy and I'm like, you know, he really doesn't have a weakness. He's just low on running time, on experience. And now with a couple of victories, playing over there in the Olympics, you know, getting all these international runs, if I was Luke Donald, he would be high on my radar right now. I don't know where the rankings sit right now, but Seamus Power to me almost seems like he should be in the team.
Yeah, I was just looking at the rankings. Sorry, Greg, I'll throw this to you here in a second. But just looking at the rankings, they just started qualifying at the BMW PGA Championship, which was that first week of September. So there's still basically 11 months of qualification to go here.
Yes. And, you know, Seamus, a win obviously goes a long way, but there's a pretty cool aspect to his game when you look at his career and the development. I find it so interesting because, Rick, you go out and watch him play in person. And the thing that you're that kind of stands out to you is his ball striking. You know, Mark says how heavy that ball is, how much the wind doesn't affect it. That's the sign of a ball striker. Yet you look at the numbers through his career, and his strength is really his short game. Arguably the putting as well. I mean, the last couple of years, the putting has gotten really, really good. And so you combine those two things together, and now you have a complete player with no holes. So I almost wonder if that full swing, the ball striking abilities that are there haven't really taken shape on the PGA Tour until the last couple of years. And I don't see anything in his golf swing that would say, he just hit it well last year, and that's going to go away. I think that's going to continue. And you have his short game and his putting ability to boot, and you're looking at a really dangerous player out there.
My assessment of him, to your observation, Greg, is that for a big guy, because he's like 6'2" or so, and he's strong, as I said, he hits it solidly. He doesn't hit it very long. But to me, if I was giving him like the character assessment, I would say the iron game is solid. He hits irons really well, and he's very cerebral. I'm keen to hear your observation about the short game there, what the statistics say. But to me, I feel like those numbers are probably good, because I've never really seen him hit a stupid shot. You know, when he misses, he's missing around the wide side of the targets. You could see as he was coming down the stretch here, he hit the right club all of the time. And when he makes birdies, it's because it's been a situation where you can. Now, I know that sounds a bit trite, but oftentimes you don't see him go and get rash with some shot selection. So he hits the ball well. He's long enough. The iron game, to me, is something to pay attention to. And just the decisions he makes are high octane. He's got a really good golf IQ, to use a bit of a golf cliche.
Yeah, speaking of some of the decisions he made coming down the stretch on Sunday, Greg, because it wasn't all roses and daisies in this final round for Seamus Power. Here are his final six holes of this event. He bogeys 13, gets it back on 14 by making a birdie, bogeys 15 and 16, gets one of them back by making birdie on 17, then bogeys 18, still enough to get the job done, one shot clear of Thomas Dietrich, but he did have to hit a couple of shots that he weren't great. He kind of had to take his medicine at times and do what he had to do to get the job done.
Well, 15, first of all, I didn't see the bogey he made on 13. I missed that. But on 14, he makes a really nice putt for birdie from about 20 feet. Then on 15, the 15 kind of embodied the day that we saw with all the wind. I mean, you're talking about a 412 yard par four. And he misses his tee shot to the right a little bit. It doesn't get down the really steep embankment. It stays up in play, which is a nice break. But I mean, think about a 412-yard hole on the PGA Tour in a typical week. That's a driver and a flip wedge, a three wood and a flip wedge at times. And he's coming up 50 yards short on his second shot. Now, it's in the rough, but not deep rough. You can see the entire golf ball. It comes up 50 yards short. And that just, it speaks to those conditions. So he makes bogey there. And then on 16, he hits I thought a great shot. You can't challenge that backhoe location. He's got some 60 feet, 50, 60 feet, something like that, up over a little ridge. And he three putts it, which is well within the range of probabilities. I mean, it was a really long putt, and it's really gusty winds. That green on 16, one of the coolest on the property, kind of an infinity green, and it's so exposed. And the wind was strong enough to where it really, I think, played an effect on the putts. And then 18, he has a two-shot lead, so I give him a little leeway, even though it was probably a mistake. He hit a great third shot from short of the green.
Man, that from the fairway, that wedge you hit was awful when you got a gigantic backstop behind that flag. The only place you don't miss is short. Now, this is after I've given him the glowing report of hitting the smart shot. I was interested because you hear Karen Stupples go, well, the wind's coming in off the left, so there's some hurt in it. You got the backstop. And the swing he made from 87 yards looked like a chip shot. And we got a glimpse of the base of the golf club, and it was still sand wedge. I'm like, dude, you got to get lean on this thing a little bit, because if you hit it long, you're okay. And
right.
To the point, that pitch shot he hit after that was quality given the situation right then.
Yeah.
The final leaderboard is going to show that Thomas Dietrich finished second, but for the vast majority of this day, gentlemen, it was a two-horse race between Seamus Power and Ben Griffin. Griffin went out and played his first 11 holes 5 under par. He was kind of in the driver's seat. And Greg, listen, Ben Griffin's got a great story to get back to the PGA Tour. He is not nearly the first guy who struggled to win a PGA Tour event. He's certainly not going to be the last, but he makes bogey on 12, 13, 14, 15, double on 16.
Yeah. If you're a scratch golfer and you're a loan officer, you're looking at Ben Griffin thinking maybe I can go give the tour a run. It's probably not a good idea. Okay. Cause Ben Griffin's really good and he had a chance, you know, he plays at North Carolina. He's playing with the, as he said before, he's playing with the Schefflers and the Morikawas and he's competing with these guys and he knows he has the game, but deals with a little bit of burnout, ends up going back to get a job where he can earn some money. He's sitting at a desk as a loan officer. And then he accidentally realizes that he's in a US Open qualifier and goes and qualifies. This is a local. He gets in to the sectionals and I think he missed the US Open by one shot. And he kind of started to think, well, maybe I should give this another run. And he ends up getting a sponsor, somebody who had played golf with for who was running a company, decided to give him a 2-year sponsorship. And he tries it out. And here he is on the PGA Tour leading an event after 54 holes, leading an event after what, 63 holes, 65 holes, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it just goes sideways for him. But a big learning ability. Yeah, you know, I always look at these 72 hole events as kind of this race, and there are players who can. Everybody makes it a certain distance where they're in the mix for a certain amount of time, and he was in the race for a really long time, and then things eventually get away from him a little bit. But I think there's a lot of positives that he should take away from this. One, he made the right decision to leave the loan officer job and go back to playing golf. But two, there's a real chance that he can compete out here. And even though he lost control of his ball a little bit and the windy conditions really exemplified that, I think he's got a lot to be proud of.
I have two observations to your point. First off, what you saw out of Ben Griffin today was the case for 72 holes. Because we're going to talk about LIV later, right? And think if the PGA Tour or major championships were a 54-hole deal, how many major championships Greg would have to his resume? Norman is okay.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about this, because I'd never seen him play and I thought the story was so cool. I mean, I was drinking this in on social media because, you know, this is what we all dream about, right? Everyone who's listening to this, all of you guys, we've all had dreams to play on the tour, and then you dream of playing on the tour, and then, you know, you practice that putt to win. And then when you get out there, you realize how hard it is to win. Then all of a sudden you find yourself in contention. Then you find yourself in the lead. And the biggest battle is to stay in the present, because you start projecting just so quickly. I don't care who you are. And some golfers are brave enough to admit, and they go, yeah, you know, I was thinking ahead. I was thinking about the prize and the check and the FedEx Cup points and all this sort of stuff and the exemption. But what you saw there with Ben was two things to me. There's one thing that doesn't really jive on the PGA Tour, and that's a ball that hooks fast. And you heard Lee Trevino say that way back in the 60s. He goes, you can speak to a fade, but a hook won't listen. And I saw a few shots there. We're starting this thing right, and you've got some crosswinds, and this ball's moving pretty big through the air. And it caught up with him on those holes that were down the cliffside where he missed one left on that par three, that signature par three hole. So I'm sure he'll iron that out because, you know, this was a big learning day for him. But I also saw a guy where things started to move really fast for him. You know, he made a couple fives and then he made that double on the par three. And then all of a sudden he looked like punch drunk for a bit. And if someone just could have said, like, you know, time out, give me just a minute here to pull him back, because it's amazing in that place when you've played so well for 65 holes, Greg, you what, 22 under or something like that? And then all of a sudden you feel like, I can't hit a golf shot, which is just not the truth. It's just the situation. And so I feel like you'll look back on this going, wow, you know, I sort of took leave of myself for just a little while, and that was enough to get steamrolled by a few guys in behind me. So I feel like when he gets a handle on that draw shot a little bit, when he learns to hold that, stand that thing up a little, and now that he realizes, hold on, I can hang with these guys, he's going to go to the next event with a whole bunch of confidence. And I hope he can parlay that into it, because it could turn into one of the great stories. But it's on him not to look at this as if to go, oh my gosh, I failed and I couldn't hit a shot when it meant something. Because the truth is, he had just lost the mental handle for a minute and was too far ahead of himself and too far behind himself. So every shot that was on hand coming down that stretch over there, it was so hard, and he just got tripped up by the situation.
The skill is stopping the spinning. Right, Greg? Like it spins for everybody quickly. Some guys can stop it more than others. I don't know if that's you're getting back to your routine, or if you can realize that you're in the moment and you can kind of forget about it. I'm sure it's different for everybody, but being able to stop the spinning quickly is the real skill set that you need.
Yes. And look, on a day like this, If you're just a little bit off, the ball is going to move a lot faster than you're used to seeing. And conversely, if you hit it really solid, like Seamus Power, the wind doesn't really move it all that much. So you have this really fine line between a well-struck shot and a slight miss that leads to a really dramatic difference in where the ball ends up. And that's not an easy thing for anybody to handle. So you got to have confidence. You got to make a decision. Am I going to play for a miss? Am I going to play for the perfect shot? And that balance is a tricky one. But I do think when he's playing in some more normal situations, he would be able to stop that spinning a lot sooner. Now, at the same time, the other guys are probably making more birdies and less bogeys. So it's all relative here. But you're right. That is a skill set, and it's something that everybody has the ability to do. It takes a little while of learning, and you got to learn how to trust yourself and believe that you can get yourself back on track. And these are the situations this is the only way you can figure that out, when you're in the moment, in the arena, with a chance to win. So I do think he will learn from it.
You're on mute, Mark.
I promised myself, because I had to cough, I promised myself I wasn't going to do that, but yeah, we are. I'm one over par. your take there is just so good, Greg, because look, yes, I'm a part-time golfer at best right now. I used to be decent back in the day, and I played 18 holes on Friday afternoon, and I'd been hitting a few balls here lately, and everything's going in the right direction. But there were just certain situations when wind out of the left, trouble down the left, and I'd have the shot visualized. I knew the swing thought. I showed the rehearsal, the whole thing. Everything that was practiced was done to the top of the backswing, midway in the downswing, like, whoa, and then you just bail and like, whoa, and you hit this freaking Roman candle off to the right-hand side. It flies off and dies. It's terrible. And I kept on looking at this going, this, Mark, is actually a lesson for you when you call golf, because a golf swing might only last an eighth of a second from swing back to contact. But your mind goes so haywire during that time. And you can so quickly, you know, doubt yourself and not have the faith to go ahead and trust the fact that, hold on, there's trouble down the left, but I can still go ahead and hit this thing. And that's why I feel like the situation, to your point, Greg, with all the trouble down the left and his ball wanting to go left and crosswinds, that was just a horrible time of it for him to be in contention.
T3 for Ben Griffin. It's worth $317,000. Seamus Power going to move to the 32nd ranked player in the world. And we're going to add a fourth to the conversation. It's Kyle Porter, who we will bring in right now. KP, welcome in.
What up?
How's it going?
Do I have the static?
So far, so good. It's done good.
I'm always terrified. Interesting day of golf. You guys probably haven't gotten to live yet, so I'll save that. But Seamus Power is, you guys obviously already discussed probably all of this, but I think it was a reminder that he's been pretty good over the last year or two, kind of quietly good. He's hadn't done a ton at big events, played well at the majors. He's had good finishes at the majors. And, you know, just looking at his numbers, even, he's kind of been in that He's been pretty similar to Jordan Spieth. I think he's a candidate for the Ryder Cup. I thought it was cool that he went out as one of the favorites of this tournament, Rick, and won it. Because that's hard to do, right? We talk about that with guys like JT and Rory all the time. It's still hard to do even when it's a lesser event. And he went and did that, and I thought that was pretty impressive.
Not only the favorite, but also the shortest odds he's ever had in a tournament. Mark, did you want to jump in on that?
No, I just wanted to say, Kyle, I actually referenced you while you were writing your editorial because there was a time last year when both Kyle and Seamus and Rory were in a field, and you were like, yeah, Seamus is the best Irishman in the field. I was like, oh, there he goes. That's Kyle Porter. Well,
he probably was at the time.
I'm trying to think when that would have been. Seamus had a really good run from Sony to Pebble Beach. I'm trying to think of what event that would have been.
Was that in 22 or 21, Mark?
No, it was last year because I'm 52 now. I remember it. So, you know, I don't remember that far.
Yeah, I like just firing off a few. Keep Rory honest every once in a while. Just fire off a few takes at him.
And he is from Northern Ireland.
True. So. It was a little like geographically misguided.
You get a couple of caveats in case that ends up backfiring on you. The rest of this leaderboard, Greg, I mean, pretty interesting, right? Thomas Dietrich's been playing great all over the world. Patrick Rogers always plays great in Bermuda. Kevin Yu posts his best finish. Denny McCarthy in the mix. I mean, this kind of shaped up. I mean, you know, when you look at some of the other favorites, Dietrich, McCarthy, Seamus Power, they're like three of the top four favorites. They all finished inside the top six. This leaderboard shaped up pretty well.
Yeah, considering the event. I mean, it was as we were looking at the DraftKings leaderboard the slate, whatever you want to call it, on Monday, it's all the top guys right up there near the top. Mm-hmm. So very few misses. And then you add Kevin Yu, who we said on Monday was the most mispriced player in the field, and he steps up. So everybody you expected to step up did, which is pretty cool. I like to see it. And it to me highlighted the trend that you have been talking about for a couple of months now, about these favorites starting to show up and starting to get near the top of the leaderboard more and more and more often. And if there's ever an event where that wouldn't happen, this is that event. For two reasons. One, the top of the board isn't as strong as it is in a typical event. And then you add in the conditions, which tends to kind of level the playing field a little bit from a skill set perspective. And it didn't happen. The leaders, the cream rose to the top, which was pretty cool to see.
Sorry, Mark.
No, I just wanted to say quick look, I want to go and watch Thomas Dietrich play because what I see, that it is attractive looking. So I want to see it in person. But I just want to speak quickly to Kevin Yu because I met him for the first time at the Palmer Cup when he played on my international team. And he and Alex Del Rey were both playing for Arizona State at the time. And the two of them were thick as thieves and just both fantastic young golfers, lots of aggressive, you know, style. And it was so fun for me because we were at the Phoenix Open and they were close to graduation. So I got a text from them. They're like, hey, we'd love to see you. So I'm like, how about dinner? So we have dinner on the Saturday night, just down the way there from the golf course. And the two of them basically said to me, we're going to turn pro now. What's your advice? And I looked at the both of them. I'm like, you're both good enough. You've just got to keep things in perspective. You know, there'll be ups and downs and just don't get too far ahead of yourself. Manage your time well, all those sorts of things. And I remember the both of them sort of looked at me and they listened and they were waiting for this earth-shattering stuff. And I was like, honestly, the way I've seen the two of you play, I feel like you are good enough to compete at the highest level. And Alex Del Rey has done beautifully over there in Europe. He's won a few times on the Challenge Tour. And yeah, Kevin Yu is proving who he is. So it's just so nice to see these young men come through because this time from going from college stud to, you know, finally getting to the big stage, it is emotional. And so many times these stars get sort of lost in the wash because they don't get into events or they play poorly when they do. And so to just see these guys come through and then play well when they've got their shot, it's just so meaningful. And it's part of the storyline that, you know, I wanted to talk about because a lot of folks don't really ever talk about it. You know, they get to the big stage, then they're spotlight gets on them and they fade, but the journey there is such a big deal. So I'm happy for Kevin.
Yeah, all these guys are big fish in a little pond, and then they go to the big pond, and they're not so big anymore. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We'll quickly go through our wagers, and then we'll hit live. And what we're going to do first is take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. Okay, we can put a bow on the Bermuda Championship with our first cut moneymaker challenge. So very, very quickly here, we had a couple of winning wagers. KP, your matchup victory, it wasn't pretty.
No.
Because they both missed the cut, but you win Mark Hubbard over Adrian Meronk.
Is that how we've always done matchups? I was trying to remember that.
Yeah, we've done it in a way that, yes, it's based on score, unless for whatever reason, like if one guy makes the cut but ends up having a horrible weekend, that's obviously not going to hurt them. But yes, if both guys miss the cut, we go to the score and Hubbard gets the victory here.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. The Russell Knox, he shot 64 on Thursday. And I had him as top 20. So I was like, okay, be competitive here. You know, Thursday was an easy day, but he just kind of faded as the week went on. So I was disappointed by that, but glad for the Hubbard win over Meronk.
I did the thing, Greg, where I picked the matchup against the guy who ended up winning.
yeah.
Which is not usually ideal. In this case, it was Aaron Rye. I got it back with a 3-1 on Kevin Yu to finish inside the top 20. Didn't give him enough credit. Would have cashed the top 5 bet.
Right. I mean, I love the Kevin Yu play. And I like the top 20 play, too. I mean, he's like we said, he was probably a little underrated coming in. And his pedigree as a college player outshined what the expectations were. It's like under the rate, the superstar out of college that's kind of under the radar. So I totally understand the top 20 play. And it probably took away a lot of sweat. You know, you're watching this thing cruise in like, all right, that's a win. Check that one off the box. So I love that play.
I had Shank and Shelton as my two outrights, which if this golf tournament was 36 holes, I would have been really happy. The rest of the ones, did not go so well for those two. And Patrick, I think he was telling us it's been 24 days since he found a winner. I think you can extend that to 31 days. That's 4 losses across the board for Patrick.
No winners in October.
The whole month.
I don't think
swept for the month. Yeah.
That's not good.
That's more trick than treat, I think.
Yeah. the Will Gordon, Nick Taylor thing was pretty close too. Right.
So Will Gordon had like a 3-shot lead and then he went like bogey, bogey, double bogey coming in and blew that one for him.
Yeah.
I think that's called a Ben Griffin, I think.
Tell Patrick from me to bet Hovland inside the top 20 next week. He can get himself some green on that board.
That's probably he's probably minus 800.
Bet it anyway. At least you'll win it.
He's probably going to fade him in a matchup.
Yeah, probably. Okay, do we have the standings for this, producer Troy? Give a quick update here for those following along at home.
Yikes. Patrick is killing. I mean, I'm not doing great, but I'm kind of just Patrick's making me look good, I guess, right. Is what I'm trying to say.
Thank goodness for Patrick. Right. For your sake, Kyle.
Kyle, your Sia made you look good in the one and done. And now, so like this is as long as you are not the slowest gazelle, right? As long as you're like
that's right.
The second slowest gazelle, you're good.
Well, that's true.
I don't know if it makes you look good.
If there's only one lion, you can be the second slowest. If there's more than one lion, you need to be like it's like an N minus one situation.
Correct. Mark, are you happy that you are not on this sheet at all?
Do you like that, Greg?
N minus one. Didn't think I'd hear that today.
Kyle, I need to send you a video of how lions hunt in packs. And all the females hunt in it. Typically, two or three of them go for one. One will get the kill shot, but then they all move in. So I think if you're the third slow, second slowest gazelle, you might get away still. Don't be the smallest gazelle. That's the thing.
Yeah, Patrick has like a broken leg, I think. I think he's in some trouble.
It's not even lions. The vultures are circling, I believe. On Patrick. Hey, plenty of time. You know,
I mean, look at this. He's 4 for 31. That's like Jose Altuve. That's not good. Sorry, Patrick. I love you, bro.
It's not great. Moneyball. Will Gordon ruined Patrick's bet, but he stayed just within the top 40 for me to cash this one minus 110. Patrick had Callum Tarrant to finish as the top GB and I at plus 600. That whiffed KP. Off to a really good start for Russell Knox. 66, 67 out of the gate. You added the fitness inside the top 20, went 72, 72 on the weekend.
Yeah, he was bad on the weekend. This was kind of tantamount to my Tom Hoagie bets from Zozo and CJ Cup. I like the top 20. I like the guys that are a little bit on the front. Like you're not betting superstars there. You're in the Russell Knox, Tom Hoagie territory. You're just trying to find somebody that's either gotten hot or plays the course well or whatever. So even though he lost, I still, I think it was it's a bet that I would make again.
Okay. That concludes our betting recap for this week. We will turn our attention to the LIV Team Championship that went down and finished just about an hour ago if you're watching live. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And we're back. LIV golf season in the books. They ended with the team championship. So on Friday, there were match play matches. On Saturday, same thing. And on Sunday, Mark, they switched to stroke play for the final four teams. And the favorites win it all. That's the four aces. That's the team of Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Taylor Gooch, Pat Perez. A historic LIV golf season for that team. Probably will never be matched again.
Well, I didn't watch it, so I can't really comment. I looked through the leaderboard because you told me it was in the third block. But the one, my only take from all of this is I didn't watch any of it, but I watched social media. And it's amazing how guys that never, ever tweeted when they were playing on the PGA Tour are now tweeting. I mean, some of them are giving interviews. Phil's coming back to do announce work. I'm like, holy cow, these guys are all in on what they're doing over there. And I have to commend Greg Norman and the folks paying the salaries to get them to do this sort of stuff, because I find it's curious how every single one of them, to a man on Instagram, is talking about, oh, what a great first season. I love the concept, the new concept, the business model. I'm like, golly, guys. I can see you all got the same song sheet. Let's at least get a bit creative how you put the social media stuff out, or at least dribble it out a few weeks at a time. Anyway, to the golf, I love the fact that when I look through the leaderboard, how all four guys counted. You know, I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Because I will say, as a recovering college golf coach, there's been once or twice where we play five and four count. But there was once or twice in my career as a coach where one guy would go down and you're living on four. And whether he withdrew, in my case, or whether someone just was like dead in the water early and was always out of the scoring, it puts an added element of pressure on everyone else because people know how things are going. So I like the concept. I liked what looked like how this final round, this championship Sunday, was set up.
Do we have that tweet from Sean Zock, Troy? Do we have that? Because I think this is what's most interesting is kind of what happens next year, right, boys? Because the season's done, and Sean Zock from golf.com, right, Kyle? He's at.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Has a tweet out about this presentation that Live Golf and the execs made, and the way it looks like it's gonna run here, Greg, is the new season will go from February to September. So we are about to enter a 6-month period of no Live Golf, and I think that this is kind of an interesting time. How will they stay relevant? If they will, what changes will they make? Right, they've got 8 events in the book. Are they going to make any wholesale changes? Like, what's going to happen next? I think is quite fascinating.
Yes, and there are look, I understand where they are. I understand that there are going to be a lot of changes, but you're already seeing one. I mean, it's the end of October and they just played their final, and now they're going to end in September. And I think they learned a lesson that the PGA Tour learned a long time ago, that is, well, football is quite popular and really hard to beat. So that makes total sense to me. The ownership of the teams is possibly interesting for some of the players. From a fan's perspective, I'm not sure it really matters a whole lot. And again, there's a lot of ways that this can change, but you can tell it's clear that they're still going all in on the team concept. You're seeing the substitution of players as well, which I guess in their eyes opens up opportunities to add more players should they be interested. They had reported their problem was they had players who wanted to get deals and they didn't have enough room. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but this seems like, well, we'll open up some more spots for some more guys. Which is an interesting concept, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some big changes from them, constant changes. And I can understand that as they're going into their second year being in operation. And I don't think they got the results they were hoping for when it comes to the viewership. So I'm definitely expecting some changes, some new concepts, and some new ideas out of them going forward.
I think the player pool is a problem. So you've got 48 now, Kyle. And if you go to 60, which is by my estimation, every team adding a substitute player, where did the 60 come from, right? We've talked about this idea of constantly having to harvest from the PGA Tour or from the upper ranks of the amateurs or guys just coming out of college and just turning pro, constantly having to grab those guys, or else you run into a situation where Shergo Al-Kurdi plays Dustin Johnson in the semifinals of the richest golf tournament ever to be played.
He got torched too.
As he should.
He just got
DJ would have torched anybody, but like you this guy has played 14 events ever. That can't be what they're going for.
Well, and it highlights. So I think if I'm being objective here, and I don't want to be objective about Liv, but I will try to be for a minute. I thought they had a really successful 2022 based on, I mean, even going back for my normal sport research and looking at some of the things I said or other people said in January, February, March, it's like, you guys are clowns. And then all of a sudden they pulled off this season. Now you can say, well, yeah, they did it with $780 million, which is true, or whatever the number. I think Bob Herrick reported it was close to $800 million. But you don't, like, you still have to do the, you still have to put the league on. You still have to, like, do all the stuff. And I actually thought they did a better job of it than most people, most of us imagine they would. But what I don't know, Rick, is, so two things. One, I don't, like, what's the path forward? Do you just run it back with the same crew? We saw in that other tweet, and I've seen other research that's like, hey, the numbers are not only are they not great, but the trajectory of them is even worse than, like, what I sort of don't care what the numbers are because it's so new, but I do care about the trajectory, and the trajectory is not good. Right.
Right.
And so do you sign a Patrick Cantlay? Do you throw like a $2 billion at a John Rahm? Like, and I'm sort of joking, but also sort of not. How do you continue that, whatever momentum you had in 2022 into 2023? And then the second thing that I wanted to say is, I'm watching this play out. I've got two screens up. I'm watching Bermuda on one and Liv on the other. And I'm thinking about Bermuda with Seamus Power getting into the Masters, putting himself on the map for the Ryder Cup next year, and all these really meaningful things. And then I'm watching Liv, and it just is so vapid. And I don't know, Rick, what I'm rooting for there. Like, am I rooting for, like, a bunch of guys making a ton of money today at Doral? I don't know that that's something I want to root for. I think the first season of any new league is always going to be kind of weird, and you don't really know, like, what's going on. And so I think because of that, the character, you're rooting for the characters. Well, I'm not rooting for Pat Perez. I'm not rooting for Patrick Reed. Like, they don't have anything to latch on to. The team concept's great. I am in on that. So maybe I'm rooting for team concepts. That seems like a really weird thing to root for. But other than that, they don't have anything that you can latch on to and say, man, I really love, like, I genuinely love that. It just is all so, like, soulless and weird and silly. And I don't know. That was kind of my takeaway as I watched it play out on Sunday.
If I may, because I've always tried to stay away from this thing a little bit for obvious reasons and for employment reasons and stuff. And but I will say this: I've been on PGA Tour Rangers talking to PGA Tour players about this league, and right at the outset of this all, there was this kind of this mystery about this new league, and the whole thing was the money and how many events are they going to be and what are the expectations and stuff, and so you could almost say, well, dang, so many millions of dollars is going to cover up for the potential of what might or might not happen. Now, the PGA Tour players, the top guys, they've been watching this stuff too. And to Kyle's point, they're like, really? Okay, this is just one massive money grab. And at certain players, the Cantlays or people you might highlight to say, let's ramp this thing up, let's make this more alluring for the fan to watch, they're just not interested. They've got bigger things to play for because they look, the money is incredible. I don't care who you are, but what the top 20 guys or whatever. Now this new little group of players that are playing in these elevated events in the Tour, none of those guys really need the money is the truth of it all. Cause they make what they make on the course is probably a quarter of what they make in total. So everyone's sort of seen the thing now and they're like, I don't know so much. Let them go do their thing. We'll stay on the tour and just see how the whole thing plays out.
Yeah. And I think that's that point is like, okay, who else is going? You can't just end here.
Yeah. I've heard of anyone.
If you're Liv, you can't just end it here. Otherwise it just sort of fizzles out over the next 3 years and then it's over.
Yes.
You have to get to a tipping point, and there, maybe they will, but I don't really think they're that close right now.
Well, here's the thing. Again, I've referenced my college career twice on this one. Maybe I need a glass of wine. Here's the one challenge about being a college coach is recruiting, no matter what the sport is. And then the other challenge when you have a limited budget is like, okay, what do you give the kingpin? And then what happens if the next kingpin comes along when the current kingpin's getting X? Now I do have to ramp that up, because then DJ or someone's going to say, yo, this is not right, because he's got another 2 years on this contract right now. So I'm keen to see how long this endless pit of money, or this well, it just seems like it's going to infinity, is going to continue to churn out dollars. Because if they want to pick up the people that they need to right now, they're going to have to get up in the largest way. And I'm not so sure that the operating budget, whatever it is, if there is indeed something, is worthwhile. Because if you go start to say, okay, I don't know, but Roy's not going to do it, John Rahm, they're going to have to give him so much money, it's going to be stupid. And then what are you doing to the current guys who were supposed to be the captains of the teams that you currently have?
Well, and then real quick, go ahead.
That
New Yorker article, I think Mark said they were funded, I think, through 2025.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that accounts for having to pay John Rahm $1 billion or whatever, but that was the number that was out there.
And actually, funny you mentioned that New Yorker article, because I think there were some things that were really revealing in that. And one of them is that the real intention, and I at least had questioned this for a long time, what's the real intention? And it does seem like there's an intention of this to be an investment, of this to start earning dollars and generating revenue. And the truth is, the only way they start earning revenue is if people start watching. And I think over this past year, while they've acquired a number of new players, they've acquired a number of stars, and they've generated kind of a media frenzy, they haven't generated viewers. And there's this path with, if you look at American business and how the private equity works, which I'm far from an expert on. In fact, I know very little about, but basically there's a period where these investors will pay for growth. And then there's a point where everything changes and they're looking for profit. So it goes from, there's kind of this cycle, as I understand it, where like the Netflix and all these companies are generating all these new users and all this new growth, and their valuation reflects that. And then all of a sudden it shifts and it's okay, well, now we know that you grew, but now we need to know that you can monetize it and earn dollars on it. And I think for Liv right now, they've proved that they can recruit at a very high cost. And at what point are they going to start recouping some of that money? And if they can't create meaning and they can't get people behind it watching it, they're going to have a very hard time doing that. And I think no matter what their next influx of players looks like, if there is an influx of players, I'm not so sure it matters. I mean, is Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele are rumored to be the next guys. Are people going to change their daily routines for Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele?
No.
I highly doubt it. So they've been really focused on the players. And I think that there are obvious reasons for that. But I don't think that they've been successful in converting that to viewers, which is a really big problem if your intentions really are to make money.
Well, that's such a good point there, because what I have heard too, and that was the last conversation when I was out on the golf course, which was, to a championship maybe, where the big deal where they're all angling towards is the sales of the 12 teams. And if you look at what you were going out there, that 75% of the teams owned by Liv or whoever it is, the holding company, and 25% by the players. Now they're looking at team sales, and apparently there's a few golf organizations that are interested in sponsorships and stuff like that. So those are big hits. Those are like billion-dollar deals. But the truth about that too, to what you say, Greg, is like, if I'm Mr. Adidas, I'm like, sure, I'll sponsor the Niblix or whoever Martin Keimer plays on, or DJ or someone. But where's the return on my investment eventually? Because there's only so much of this that you can claim back for tax investments and stuff like that. I mean, it's curious to see how this whole thing's going to go over the next little while.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I think that's I 100% agree. You saying if I'm Mr. Adidas, I'm going to sponsor the Niblix is not a sentence that I ever envisioned here. But I do think their sort of out card is if you just find a couple of, and I mean, billionaires do weird stuff, but if you just find a couple of billionaires and they want to own a team that Phil Mickelson's on or that Brooks Koepka's on, and then all of a sudden Liv has this ridiculous revenue source from a billionaire that's just doing like this vanity purchase. And that would be frustrating because it's not a real thing, right? It's just a ridiculous, like, vanity play. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's a possibility though, for them over the next couple of years.
Well, like you look at the Premiership or football over there in Europe, right? Kazoo and these companies spend billions of dollars on sponsorships of the teams because they get that money. They recoup that money in advertising dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made the joke about these guys tweeting and Instagramming and stuff. If some billionaire buys some team, you're going to watch those four boys on that team hopping around the place, playing all over the joint with Mr. Billionaire in question. And they said they wanted to play less golf and have less commitments. Oh, my good golly. They're going to be tweeting like it's going out of fashion.
The revenue thing is like, I mean, I don't know what their revenue numbers were this year. They could not have been in the seven figures. Right, Rick?
I mean, they gave away tickets, which would have been, in theory, a good revenue stream for them. They have no television deal, which would have been a good revenue stream for them. I guess they sold beer at these events. Did they have ads on anything? What other revenue streams did they even have?
They had that one ad in Jeddah, but it was a company that the public investment fund also funds. It was like us promoting our First Cut merchandise, basically.
Right.
So yeah, they probably did make seven figures of revenue based on like concessions or gear. You know, all that high flyers gear that was just flying off the shelves, but
they were giving away caps apparently in Miami.
I saw that. I don't know. The it's just a weird thing to not create or generate any revenue at all, right? We talk about these Netflix and Uber and stuff, and it's like, yeah, the math doesn't work profitability wise, but it's not like they're generating no revenue, you know, right. And Liv is generating nothing. And so you're like, well, there is a path to sustainability, but it's a pretty long one as it stands right now.
The team sales make sense, right? You get somebody to pay $150 million for a franchise, like in any English Premier League or whatever, but that comes with guaranteed payouts because of these TV deals. And depending on what league you're in, you're getting a share of that revenue. It comes with, you know, jersey sponsor. There's just so much other stuff that to say any of these teams is worth really anything right now outside of the names that you have, which could be changing, is a hell of a stretch.
I mean, you have the names to generate viewers. That's the idea. And when that's the purpose of the names, right? We want big name players because people will want to watch them. And if the names don't convert people, normal people, to turn on the TV or the computer or whatever to watch these big names, then those dollars invested become worthless.
And maybe,
go ahead.
I might be thinking a bit micro here, but you know, each one of these players, I notice a lot of them still have their equipment manufacturer deals and they're still wearing the apparel and stuff, which I found somewhat surprising. But let's say I'm Cam Smith and I wear Munsingwear, the Penguin. And now my team gets bought by Adidas. Now everyone on Adidas is going to wear Adidas shoes, Adidas clothing, and use tailor-made clubs. Cam Smith is not going to be the Cam Smith he used to be, I promise you. And so that's where you get into the micro weeds of this thing too. If some like Srixon come along, because there has been a lot of conversation about them getting after perhaps a Japanese team. So it is curious when you really start to delve into the nitty gritty of it all.
Rick, you know, it's going to be just sick is when halfway through 2023, you've got a player, I don't know who, I can think of a few names, that is unhappy with how LIV is going, and they try to leave LIV or try to sue the, like, LIV Golf, and then you've got it going both ways. And like, I genuinely think that's going to happen at some point. I don't know if it'll be in 2023, but it's going to be incredible when it does, because you'll just, yeah, it's going to be just a complete mess whenever that happens.
That is a really good take, because, you know, these golfers, they talk about themselves as independent contractors, freelancers. They can do business with whomever they want as a sponsor, unless you're Rory McIlroy or Tiger, where Nike basically buy you out and you can't wear anything else and talk about anything else. There's very few of them. So one guy's got a badge here and apparel there and shoes this and stuff like that. You're putting ostensibly all of your eggs in one basket, yeah, if you're doing this sort of stuff. And Kyle, your point is so well-founded, because now instead of them getting little bits of money from all over the show and doing corporate outings here, now it's like you show up for the LIV events, you wear your LIV uniform, you play in the LIV tournaments, you tweet about, you know, it's like this is who you are right now, and your identity as your independent contractor has gone away.
The final thing, and we can put a bow on it with this, Greg, because I imagine the next 4 or 5 months until there's another LIV event and everything that's going to, I'm assuming we're going to be talking about this a lot more, is that they're going through this 14 tournament schedule. They are trying not to, they won't obviously play same weeks as major championships. They don't want to go up against marquee PGA Tour events. They don't want to have events the week before major championships, and they want to run from February to September. Well, now there's only like, all those caveats, there's only like 16 weeks that you can put your 14 events in all over the world, which is going to also be a lot of, I mean, of course they can pull it off, but like the logistics of this are going to be difficult for next year.
Yeah. And I would expect that. It is only their second year. Yeah. So, you know, I think it would be reasonable if you were just looking at this, like, you take all of the buzz and all the conversation we've had out of this, and you just look at a startup and predict the challenges a startup will go through. This is certainly one of them. So they're finding their place is something that'll take time if they're able to do it at all. It's going to take time. But I do think that they'll be able to manage a schedule. It's just, I tell you, the 20 elevated events for the PGA Tour definitely makes it a lot harder on LIV if you're trying to avoid those events. So yeah, it'll be a challenge for them.
Okay. Well, we shall see. Any final thoughts on LIV/Bermuda before we get out?
Do you have a list, Rick, of the most likely to go to LIV next? I was trying to find it. I couldn't find anything. I didn't know if you had anything handy.
Do you think like an actual physical list or one that's just off the top of my head?
No, not off the top of your head. I'm not trying to get you to make odds off the top of your head. Just I don't know if there was like some book that had put out, like, you know how they did with Cam Smith is 2-1 to go to, or whatever.
Hold on. I'm going to look at the one book that I think could have this. But, and I'll see otherwise.
Cause is there anybody, I mean, Mark, you said this earlier, is there anybody, Greg, that, you know, we heard being out there this summer, it's like I heard every name.
Yeah.
Like literally, like every name was spoken about as it relates to LIV. But is there anybody right now other than like an Adam Scott or somebody like that, that's in that sort of age range of guys that go and demographic Australians, you know, that type of thing? But is there anybody else that you're like, I'm kind of worried about him?
Well, I've seen these reports come out recently about Xander and Cantlay. They're apparently those rumors in Miami are swirling. Is that trustworthy at all? I don't know. And then the other two were Mito and Thomas Peters, who were also rumors of that swirling. But again, I go back to the same point, which is at the centerpiece of this business, any professional sports business, they operate on viewers in whatever platform that is. And I don't know if any of those four names, if they all go or they all don't, I don't know if that really turns the tide of viewership in any way.
No. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't. The tide is, I think, farther from turning than maybe Liv would have liked you to believe like a month ago.
Yeah. The one thing it would do for them is it would help the, if you want to call it propaganda in their advertisements, right? The fight against official world golf rankings, it strengthens those things, I guess. But it feels like all those kind of arguments and conversations are falling a little, they're kind of falling a little flat. The buzz and the interest has just gone down.
The players are removing themselves from the lawsuit, for Pete's sake. Every time I turn around, there's one other player. Yeah. I don't want any more part of this. Yeah.
Well,
and if you're a player on the tour now, you know, I think the tour's done a much better job of, again, going back and looking at what happened this year, the tour's done a better job of guaranteeing money to the players that make the tour the money, right, through the PIP,
which yeah.
It is easy to make fun of the PIP, but it's a vehicle for guaranteeing money to players that deserve it, right? And the tour needed and needs that vehicle, like that they need to have that, because you can't go into season saying, hey, that guy that's responsible for 40% of our revenue every year is guaranteed $0. That's an insane business model. There's no business on earth that would ever do that. And so I think with how much they've dipped into their reserves and all these different things, it seems a little less compelling now to go over to Liv when it's so messy than it did maybe 8 months ago.
Yes, yes, I'm going to put my prognostication hat on.
Is that a word?
No, I just made it up. You're going to have a sweet event down in Mexico. Then it's Houston, I think it is. Then it's RSM. Davis Love is going to be forefront. He's going to get the mic in front of his face. He's going to stand up as one of the tour's elder statesmen, Ryder Cup captain, President's Cup captain, go, hey, guys, you guys know where your bread's buttered, on what Palmer said. So week thereafter, Tiger Woods is hosting in Hero, I think, is how the schedule goes. Tiger's going to do the same thing. Then it's going to be football over Christmas. Then it's going to be Hawaii a couple of weeks. You're going to see some of the best. And then it's going to be Torrey Pines finishing on a Saturday because of AFC football on a Sunday. And the tour is going to come out shining like a rose, because then you've got that West Coast swing and all of the best players are going to be playing, because you've got Torrey Pines, you've got Phoenix, which is now an elevated event, and you've got LA. So three of the four, the big events, you got the stars showing up in the West Coast. I mean, what more do you want?
You heard it here
first.
I love it.
There you go.
Phoenix, which is also where the Super Bowl is going to be. And it is going to be,
yeah,
that's one of these years where it lines up, where you get the eclipse.
I wish they would make that, or at least some of those other West Coast Saturday. I love the Saturday finish. I think it's phenomenal.
I loved it too. Them on Sunday was the best thing ever. I think
it's great.
Everything until the Super Bowl should be, like, everything in the fall should run Wednesday to Saturday.
Sure.
Yeah. Started. Who's the commissioner? Kyle, aren't you the commissioner?
Yeah, I got a lot of sway at the PGA Tour headquarters.
All right, gents. Absolute blast. We'll be back next week to watch Victor Hovland go for not one, not two, but three Mayakoba championships in a row. Colin Morikawa is in the field. Scotty Scheffler's in the field. Ooh. Tony Finau's in the field. Taylor Montgomery, next best thing, in the field. So we'll have all that coverage for you. DFS show on Monday, Mega Preview Pod on Tuesday, Sunday recap. But for now, big thanks. Producer Troy does all the hard work behind the scenes. Mark Immelman, available at Mark_Immelman. Greg Ducharme, the real GFD, and Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate. Available now.